Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I am Becky, and sitting nearby me, you're not really across the table from me, you're adjacent to me, is Cedric Sky Seti.
What's up?
And you are listening to the Happy Project Podcast. Listen.
What am I hearing? Listening to what?
You know. You're listening to...
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
The Happy Project.
The Happy Project Podcast.
Yeah.
Hey, Cooks, I wanted to ask you something.
Give it to me.
When you visited Korea for the first time, that was in 2012, right?
2012, yeah.
Do you remember what was something that stood out to you and you were like, whoa, mind blown, amazed? Did you have anything like that?
Do you really want to know?
Oh, do I?
Well.
Don't say it. Okay, let's say it at the same time.
Okay.
One, two, three. How girls. Pretty all the girls were. I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say it.
Yeah, I was mind blown.
What?
You were
that guy
I
watching
was.
Them with slack jaw.
All right, look, this is 11 years ago.
Okay.
And I was just amazed at just how pretty
everyone was.
Yeah, they were just, I don't know, like it's just that they kept, I don't know, they just
all
looked,
smiling at you.
No,
that
not
would
really.
Be creepy.
They were put together well.
That's true.
They were just, I don't know. I don't want to sound creepy, man. Like, they were just pretty.
Yeah. Well,
and I was amazed.
Well, that's probably true because, like, attractiveness is a big deal in Korea.
Yeah.
You know, people like to look good, dress well.
Right.
Do your makeup. That's important.
So, I guess that was like… And this is my first time ever going to Korea. And…
You're mind blown.
Yeah, I was just like, man, everybody fine.
This is so funny.
Not everybody, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it was kind of like a return when I came to New York. I was like, everybody dresses badly. Like, that was to me my big shock. As opposed to in Seoul, where I mean, people really take big pride in how they look.
Yeah, I experienced that for sure.
And your eyes were like, bazinga, bazinga.
Yeah, but I was also in a different place. I mean, I was just, you know, I was a young, fresh, single man out there trying to
pick up the ladies.
Live his life. Yeah.
Did you date anyone while you were there for your first trip?
For my 3 weeks I was there.
Well, I think, didn't you like have like a dinner with somebody? Wasn't someone trying to set you up with someone?
Oh, okay. So no, it was… It was actually, I don't want to, in the off chance she listens or whatever. No, it was someone that my sister knew from college.
Yeah.
And we had dinner with her because she was living in Korea at the time. She moved back to Korea. And we were at dinner. It was me, my mom, my sister, my brother-in-law, and the lady. And I was like, man, I think I'm in love. So…
Oh.
So yeah, we were trying to… I was trying to like… I think I sent her an email or something like
an
that.
An email!
Yeah, it was like no response.
No.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so so no luck on the ladies' front at that time. So it wasn't
time.
Until the… It wasn't until the second time around.
Yeah.
A little lucky.
And a couple years in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I went to… It was when I was old enough to remember, clearly. When I was 16. I remember the thing that I was very like, whoa, fascinated by was the big pots outside of… what do you call them? The outside eating stalls, putta, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had like the big metal pot and they were just stirring it and it was full of pondegi.
Ooh.
Do you remember those?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the big… They have these big metal pots and they sit
outside…
You could
smell it from a mile away.
With the silkworm. And it's just full of silkworms. And they're just stirring it with a big spoon. And then yeah, it smells really strong. It has a very distinct smell. And then you go up there and they're like, oh, you want some pondegi? And then it's like, you know, 2,000원 for a little cup. Little paper cup.
Did you actually like try some? Or
yeah, no, I remember because we were in Songtan at that time, you know, closer down to where my 할머니 lives. And my mom wanted to eat the pondegi because it's a little bit more old school outside of
Seoul.
By
the way, it's silkworms.
Yeah, silkworms.
It's like edible silkworms.
Edible. And so my mom wanted to get the pandegi in the little paper cup and we ate it. And it was good.
So that was like amazing to you?
To me, that was amazing when I saw. I was like, whoa, pandegi. Yeah. But
clearly
the thing
we
is,
we have different ideas of what's amazing.
You were amazed by the beautiful women and I was amazed by the worms. So kind of the total opposite of all the spectrum. But this all ties into what we're going to talk about today, which is, hey, Hafiz, you want to live in Korea? This is what you need to know. Ourselves a significant amount of time. I mean, I lived there like a third of my life, you know, and you were there for almost 5 years.
Maybe an eighth of my life or something.
An eighth of your life. But I mean, still, it's not just like visiting. And as anybody who has, who is a seasoned traveler or has lived elsewhere outside of their home country for a significant amount of time can attest that living and visiting places are two different things. And these are some things that we learned and experienced when we lived in Korea for this long period of time. And we thought it might be useful for you because we do get a lot of messages via Instagram or even just people asking like, hey, I want to live in Korea. What do you think? Or, oh, I want to live in Korea, but I'm scared of this. Or how can I prepare for that? Or what should I do in this case? And I thought it would be nice to kind of allay those fears or maybe scare you.
Ooh, yeah.
No, just tell you the honest truth. And you can take from it what you like. But these are the things we experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
if you're like me and you grew up always wondering, what would it be like to live in Korea? And you just sort of have all of these expectations and these dreams of, oh, as soon as I touch down in Korea, this is how it's going to be. Keep listening because it may not be what you expect, but it could be better than that.
That's
depending
true.
On your perspective and how you look at it. And I think going into it with I guess more prepared, you know, and mentally in terms of how things really are, maybe how people will perceive you will actually help you to have a better experience because you know what to expect.
That's really true. Yeah, this is why like this guy I once went out with on a date like way back in college before I met you. And I remember we got in a big argument about this because he said he always has low expectations for everything and everyone. I was like, you can't have low expectations for everyone. That's not really fair. And he says, no, it's actually super fair because if my expectation is low, then you're going to always come off as an amazing person.
Mm-hmm.
Because you always pass the expectations.
That's true.
So we take that lesson, we bring it here. You should have realistic expectations about Korea.
Not low, realistic.
No, yes, realistic expectations. That way you don't get as much disappointment perhaps, you know, in some other cases. Or you might also be like, whoa, amazed, blown away.
Yeah. And by the way, this is not going to be like a super negative.
No.
The setup may feel like that, but no, we're going to come from our experiences and we're going to come from not only our experiences, but what we've observed, you know, around us. So I guess what we could do is kind of go for like, remember those memes, the video memes, or even like, I guess like the Jiffy memes or whatever, where it used to be like expectation versus reality.
Yeah.
It's like very big on social media a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can kind of touch on these ideas like that. So
okay.
Expectation, and then we'll talk about the reality,
yeah.
Which might match the expectation.
That's
who knows?
True.
We'll see.
Yeah, ooh, you're tantalizing people. Yes. So, okay, let's say the first… I think this is a big one that people wonder.
Yeah.
Especially when you're mixed Korean, or you might not look Korean, or you may not have experienced Korean culture fully. You might think, will I be accepted? And some people will, you know, you have this expectation. Oh yeah, when I go to Korea, finally I'll be accepted. Because where I am now, nobody is accepting me. Or they always point out my differences. Or there's no one around me who looks like me. And you might feel like if I make it to the motherland, I'm going to be surrounded by other Koreans. And finally, people are going to accept me for who I am. And go.
they'll accept you as a human being.
That's a good one.
No, I think a lot of people, including myself, you know, prior to moving to Korea, you know, I went with the, I guess the, I wanted to actually just be part of Korea and assimilate. I think that was the word I was trying to fish for, but and really become part of the culture. Like I didn't want to be like a foreigner here in Korea that's here for a little bit. I wanted to really learn and be part of the culture. And so one of the things that I was hoping and actually expecting was I'll be accepted. I know that I'm half Korean. I know that I don't look like everyone that's there, but you know, once they find out I'm half Korean and I'm really putting in this effort to be part of the culture and to be part of this modern day society, that they would accept me. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, you are accepted, but maybe not in the way that you would probably hope, at least for me. Because I think a lot of times, like whenever people found out that I was half Korean or whenever I mentioned, they're like, oh, that's really cool. And I think there is a difference in maybe how they treat you, because it's like, oh, he is kind of one of us, or his mom is one of us, but you're not necessarily looked at or viewed, generally speaking, like a full Korean. Like, oh, you're just like us.
Yeah.
Versus like my experience here in America is whenever I'm around like a lot of my African American like peers or people and they find out that, you know, I'm black, my dad is black, like you're one of us, you know? So it's a little different. It's actually, you know, very different, kind of opposite.
Yeah, it's actually the total opposites of each other.
Right, right. So that was something I was hoping to get moving to Korea, but I didn't. And so that was something that I had to sort of wrestle with. And that's beyond the scope of this video to dive deeper
or
into
podcast.
That. Yeah.
If you're expecting a video, it's not going to happen here.
Right. This podcast. So yeah, you will be accepted in one way, but also you won't necessarily be accepted like they accept a fellow Korean.
Right.
And this can also apply to gyopos or like full Korean Americans that move to Korea. A lot of times they don't feel fully accepted as well because, oh, but you're from America or you can't speak Korean fluently.
Right.
But I do think there is a difference because I think it's a little harder for them to accept halfies as their own completely versus maybe someone who is fully ethnically Korean, maybe from somewhere else that comes in. So that is a whole nother video and topic, but I think that is the reality.
You are such a YouTuber. Check in for the next video.
Oh, yeah. It's called retention.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. That is… A lot of times you're going to have an expectation. Well, maybe… You know, I wonder too, for a lot of mixed Koreans, I think it's more of a fear actually that I won't be accepted. Mm-hmm. And to kind of allay that fear a little bit… I think it is true you are going to feel a struggle to be accepted, especially if you don't speak the language and especially if you are not going with the status quo in a lot of cases because you don't understand what's going on or you don't understand the culture. It's kind of inevitable. Like if you just don't know what's happening, you're not going to really be able to step in line with everyone else. But even if you are like… I think that Korea is a little bit more embracing now of mixed Koreans than it has been in the past.
Sure.
So I don't think you need to have the fear of, you know, people throwing things at you and telling you, get out.
No, no, no.
Like, you don't need to worry about this thing or even outright distaste or aggression. The kind of non-acceptance we're talking about is just what comes with people having a difficulty equate what they're seeing with their eyes versus what you're telling them, which is, hey, I'm mixed Korean and I speak Korean fluently. Voila. Like,
right.
People might still have a difficulty accepting that fully.
Right.
And it can be a tall order to ask of all of Korea society to accept you.
Right. A very homogenous nation that has had this idea that's still ingrained in the society and the cultural roots of like this one pure blood, you know, sort of idea. Pure blooded Koreans, that is. And so I think it is shifting and getting a little… I guess the definition of what it means to be Korean is starting to broaden a little bit more, generally speaking. But… yeah, I think on a broad scale, you know, you won't necessarily have that sort of acceptance if that is what you're seeking and looking for or expecting. Not everyone goes there expecting that, right?
Yeah.
But I certainly did, and there will be people that might accept you 100%.
That's
like
true.
I've had, I could think of at least one friend my first year there that just accepted me as Korean and treated me no different.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of it does come down to the individual. What is their concept of what it means to be Korean? If you fit into that category. And also a lot of it has to do with how willing you are to be a part of the society. Because definitely you're going to have people who go to Korea and just like, forget it. This is too hard to fit in. So I'm not even going to try.
Yeah.
And in that case, like, why would anyone accept you if you're just like, I don't want to be part of this.
Right.
Right. The other thing you might be expecting, and this is kind of, you know, going in part with that, is that you'll blend in. And this changes depending on how you look.
Mm-hmm.
It's no denying that mixed Koreans, depending what you are mixed of, like you may look more or less Korean. Those who look more Korean, you have a higher likelihood of being able to get by, especially if you speak Korean, especially if you wear, you know, similar fashions, you do your makeup that way, you're not standing out, then yeah, you might be able to blend in many scenarios like I did. But if you don't really look very Korean, ethnically Korean, then, you know, it's inevitable. You are mm-hmm. going to stand out.
Yeah. I definitely got stared at every single day.
That's just because you're good looking.
Oh, well, thank you. But yeah. So like, you know, I obviously have the self-awareness to know that I don't look like a full Korean. So yeah, I definitely didn't blend in. My skin's darker than 99% of the Korean population. So, you know, but that's not a bad thing though.
Exactly.
You know?
That's
and
what's important.
It's not like
to
people
remember.
Are necessarily looking down on you. There might be some, but.
But the thing is, you can't base your behavior or expectations on every single person and what they're thinking.
Yeah.
You'll just blow into a million pieces and that would be terrible.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess this point is more like, it just depends on how you look and, you know, how moldable you are to fit into how everyone else is and how everyone else lives.
Mm. To be honest, I think a lot of people just find it interesting when they see somebody who is not fully Korean, but there is like Korean-esque aspects to them. Like people find it interesting.
Right. And I think people are just like, you know, I don't recall getting a negative comment on how I look in Korea. I, you know, people might stare or people might say something or they'll say model, you look like a model or you're handsome. Yeah. I don't know if they mean it or not, but that's, you know, so I've only had positive experiences.
Yeah. I mean, you will get those who are like, what? I would never guess. We're like, you're not Korean.
Yeah,
you'll
exactly.
get those kind of things too, right? But you can't change everybody's mind.
Yeah.
And the fact is, what's important to remember is you are not 100% Korean. And that's totally okay.
Yeah.
That's the key point, honestly.
Right.
Another expectation which you might have is that your Korean is really good. Or you will learn Korean very quickly.
Yes and yes. That was me.
Yeah.
In terms of expectation.
Yeah. And you know, to be honest… Language evolves depending on where you are. And so to give you an idea, like Korean Americans speak Korean just differently to my ear as well. Even Koreans who have immigrated to the US speak differently than how I hear Koreans in Korea speak. Or Goryeosara, they're Korean. If people are still retaining the language, it's just different. The words you use, the vocabulary, what part of the Korean country did you come from, the surrounding slang, you're not picking it up at the same speed as you hear it in Korea. You might be using terms that are no longer used in the common Korean tongue in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might have had that experience and you might be really fluent in the Korean of your immediate community. But then when you go to Korea, it's like, it's pure Korean.
Yeah.
Even that's sometimes not pure Korean. There's a lot of Konglish that's used in Korea that Korean Americans don't even know at all, right? Which is another funny thing, honestly. Because like you'll be like, oh yeah, it's Konglish. And people in the US will be like, what? I've never heard that word. But in Korea, people are using it very regularly. So you might have this expectation like, oh yeah, I've been speaking Korean my whole life. Or all my friends speak Korean. Then you go to Korea and people might pick you out right away. Like, are you speaking Korean? What is that word?
They'll be quick to call you out, you know? Just like, especially if you're in a taxi or something. Like
oh, yeah.
You try to speak Korean, like, oh, you're not from here, or, you know, something like that. But, you know, for me, I remember one, I thought I was a decent Korean speaker prior to moving to Korea. You know, one, because of growing up hearing Korean from my mom, you know, and the Korean churches that we grew up in. And then living in essentially K-Town here in New Jersey for mm-hmm. 5 years prior to moving to Korea. I was like, no, my Korea, you know, it's not that great, but like it's conversational. Mm-hmm. I moved to Korea. I'm like, I was struggling. So I had a reality check, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to get fluent really fast. You know, like yeah. I just need a year.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I mean, actually my first year I did actively study and I was, you know, I did have some Korean friends.
Yeah.
That that we just kind of, you know, I practice English with them and they practice Korean with me or vice versa. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I did improve, but it was not nearly as easy as I thought. I thought, oh, everything's going to be in Korean. Like all the, you know, signs whenever I go out, I have to just like I have to learn Korean. But then I realized, especially in the areas that I've lived, which is Daejeon, which is the fifth largest city, and also Seoul, which is the largest capital city, English is everywhere. Mm. And there's also like English speaking communities or bubbles there. And it's so easy to get caught up in that because it's comfortable,
mm-hmm.
right? So that actually does not really help your process, at least for me. So that was my reality. I did not learn nearly as much as I thought I would. Part of that was on me, of course. Well, most of that is on me. But, you know, I did improve a little bit, but just know that it doesn't just happen automatically. It's not an osmosis type of thing.
No, it's not.
So you definitely have to actively try to speak. You got to make those mistakes. You got to get over the shyness of like, you know, for me, it was like, oh, I'm half Korean. I should be able to speak Korean. So I had this
put that burden on yourself.
Yeah, I had this weird burden that didn't need to be there that hindered me. So
I still remember the one time I was at the Pyeongnijam in the convenience store and I wanted to buy like eggs. Mm-hmm. So there's two words for egg in Korean. And you have gaeran and 달걀, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one is what the Chinese hanja basic and then one is like pure Korean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one is which. But in different scenarios, you just have to know when you're going to use gaeran and when you're going to use 달걀. And I was in the Pyeongnijam and I asked him, I was like, oh, how much are these 달걀? And he was like, gaeran? And I said, oh, 네, gaeran. And he said, oh, this is how much it is. And I left the Pyeongnijam. I was crying.
You're crying?
Because I was like, I'm so stupid. Why can't I remember gaeran instead of daegyeon? Like, this is the amount of pressure I put on myself.
Yeah.
Right?
And you know, he doesn't care. He's just like, oh, she just didn't know. Like, just correct me. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's silly.
Just don't
put
that burden on yourself. It's so pointless. And you know, you don't want to be standing outside the Pyeongnijam holding four eggs crying. Like, nobody wants to be in that scenario. So don't let that be you, okay?
Yes.
It's totally okay to not pick up Korean as quickly as you might expect yourself to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the other thing. Everything is going to look good on you. This might be an expectation you have. And I think because the advent of K-pop, K-beauty, K-makeup, you know, K-fashion. A lot of people are like, whoa, it looks so nice. And I think it's true that if you're looking at pure Korean fashion, originally like people dress well. You can get good quality clothes.
Mm-hmm.
The makeup, skincare, I totally agree, is really, really nice. And people know how to do their makeup and hair a little bit differently than what you might have learned yourself growing up if you grew up, let's say, in the U.S. Like the makeup style is just different. And I think some people have this realization like, wow, this clothes is all free size and I'm really tall.
Mm-hmm.
So none of the pants fit me or it's all crop tops on me. Or like a lot of times, you know, a lot of Korean girls will have a smaller bosom. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, I just can't fit this shirt. You might feel this frustration. No matter where I shop, none of the sizes are for me. You might feel that frustration. Or you might see the makeup that Korean girls are doing. And you try it on yourself. It just looks whack. Why? Because your eyes, maybe you've got a double eyelid
mm-hmm.
that other girls don't have.
Right.
Or the shape, face shape that you have, right? Instead of this kind of contouring, they're doing something else. And your face looks huge in comparison.
Right. Or your darker skin and they don't have your shade of foundation.
Yeah. Or you want to get this cool haircut. Like I remember for me, I really loved the choppy bangs that were popular, especially in like My Sassy Girl. You know, like not My Sassy Girl. Oh, what was it called? No, it was My Sassy Girl. It was a drama. The K-drama mm-hmm. My Sassy Girl. Anyway,
we did a podcast on that.
She had these bangs.
Yeah.
And I loved her bangs so much. So I remember when I was in Korea, I asked for the bang haircut and they gave it to me. And I looked… I looked so bad. And I was like, what? why does it look good on me? So my hair texture is a little different, mm-hmm. right? So I think you can have this expectation like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to learn how to do it. I'm going to look all this. And you might just find that mainstream trendy Korean looks just doesn't look good on you.
Yeah.
And that's just something to accept.
Right. But it might, you know, there are
it
some
also
like,
might look really good.
There are some like guys that I see that, they have these certain hairstyles, like, and I guess more so in like the modeling and commercial acting industry. Mm-hmm. Like whenever they get their hair and makeup done, usually like these makeup artists, they'll style it more in a Korean mm-hmm. style way. And, it, you know, it looks good on them.
You look really good.
Well.
When we did our Hyundai commercial and they did your makeup. Oh my gosh, you look so
makeup,
nice.
Makeup, yes. Yes.
Yeah, they do like, your brows. Ugh,
yeah,
you look
hair
awesome.
Is hit or miss, you know, because yeah. they're not used to working with my kind of hair.
That's true.
Yeah.
But they, when they do your brows, you look really good. Well. Like you look great with the brows.
Thanks.
We got his eyebrows done once at the waxing.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
That we must
went,
hurt, man.
We went to get his eyebrows waxed. It was so funny. And the lady who was doing your eyebrows, because they would like, you know, wax your eyebrow. And the uh-huh. first one came up and we were like, oh, shh. Like, oh, shh. Oh, shh. Oh, shh. Oh, shh. And she was like, oh, is he cursing at me? She asked me, like, is he cursing at me? Like, no, no. He cannot keep it in. It's so painful.
Yeah.
That was
I'm not used
so
to that
funny.
Pain in that area,
yeah,
man.
But the, you know, Korean brows look so good on you.
No, I like it. Yeah, I do like the Korean style brows. Mm-hmm. But I guess it just depends on like the person. So this one obviously will depend on the person. And if you want to adapt to more of a Korean style. Yeah. I mean, because it'll obviously be easier to dress in that style while you're there. Because shopping, like for me, I wanted to like have a certain like cut of clothing or shirts. And I remember when I first moved, everything was like kind of looser fitting. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted like that nice like tapered t-shirt look. And it was hard for me to find in Korea. So
that's
I would
true.
Like eventually just order from the States yeah. and just have it shipped here, pay for the shipping. So it just really depends on what you want to look like or what kind of style you want to adapt mm-hmm. and whether that style will look
is
good
on you. It's trendy
in
Korea at the time mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
Right? If you can find it or not.
Yeah.
Because I remember the time, especially when I was at the Model Academy, everybody was wearing like the long coat. I don't mean the puffer jackets.
Yeah,
I mean
yeah.
like they like look like not even trench coat. They're mm-hmm. just like pea coat, but like really long.
Like the wool
and,
type of
yeah,
coat.
Yeah, and boxy. Everybody was wearing those. And I think sometimes it can look good on me. But also, I'm very tall. So I just look like a big moving wall. So you gotta pick and choose. Okay. Mm-hmm. You look a little different, and you know, everybody's fashion is a little bit different. So that's just something to keep in mind, which can be hard to do when everyone is looking the same in Korea. Same
yeah.
makeup, same hair, same clothes, right? So it's okay. If it doesn't look good on you, that's okay. Figure out what does.
Definitely. The next expectation that you might have is you'll be very familiar with Korean culture.
Yeah.
Because you are half Korean, you grew up in a Korean household, or yeah. your at least one parent was Korean, or maybe both parents were Korean.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to just assimilate easily.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I thought as well.
Hey, it's like, you know, in your house growing up, you were like a little goldfish. And you're swimming in the fish tank of your home. And inside the fish tank, there's Korean food
and VHS
Korean
tapes
furniture
of Korean drama.
Yeah, and Korean dramas. And you're just watching it in your fish tank. You're like, I am a Korean fish. And then you get on a plane. This is where the metaphor falls apart. And then you get to Korea and it's an ocean. And now you're a little fish in the ocean. You're like, wow, this is a lot of stuff.
That's a pretty extreme metaphor.
So when you get into the ocean, you might feel a little disoriented.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the heart behind that makes total sense because
yeah.
like, you know, for me, it was a certain expectation of like, oh, I understand Korean culture. I know how things work and I know how to deal with people, older people, younger mm-hmm. people. And more or less, a lot of those principally are very similar or the same. But like, I didn't realize how far advanced or how different Korean culture is sort of shifted from my idea and understanding through my mom,
yeah.
through like the church community, the Korean church community, like how different that was. Like,
yeah.
like it has just advanced in Korea so much. And, you know, it didn't take me a long time to, as a matter of fact, it was very easy for me to adapt to it. Mm. But I was pretty shocked. I was mm-hmm. like, wow, people like are a little different. They are using different like words mm. and the language has evolved from the things that my mom would say.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that was actually kind of fun for me to discover
yeah, yeah.
and to be wrong about. yeah. I actually think. But assimilating, like, let me say something on this, and it kind of relates to the language point, is I guess assimilating is, you know, it's something that a lot of it is on you to try to assimilate. It's not easy because, like, depending on what you're in Korea for, you know, whether you're working or not, like, it's hard to develop relationships in Korea, you know, as it is, even as a Korean, because a lot of people have, like, relationships, they have their work relationships and they have their friendships that maybe they've been friends with their people since grade school. So you're coming in and you're trying to assimilate. You need places to actually be to assimilate, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just going to a restaurant and assimilating and ordering in Korean. It's like your social group or even your work setting.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is on you to try to put yourself in those situations, but it's not always possible depending on why you're there. And, you know, so that is something that will take a lot of effort.
And the thing too about Korea is a lot of it is segmented, as in the way you behave in this circumstance with these people will be vastly different than how you behave with those people in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. So for example, the way you're hanging out with your grade school friends that you've known since forever is going to be vastly different than how you behave in the work office with your bosses. Of course, it is the same even in cultures where it's a little bit more of an even plateau, right? You can behave similarly in the same scenarios, but in Korea, it's just so different. And so if you're growing up, let's say in the US, your experience of those cultural settings or those different settings is going to be very limited compared to what you'll experience in Korea. So you might have grown up knowing how to interact with a Korean mom and all her friends and all your emos. You'll know how to do that, but that's not going to help you when you're in a meeting with a new client, if you're working in an office. Like, you can't, totally that doesn't really translate. Yeah. Like, those cultural things, it's just different.
Yeah.
And you just have to experience it and learn it.
Right.
And you can feel frustrated. Like, why can't I know this? I have a Korean mom. But that's one side of the Korean culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't had the opportunity maybe to experience another side of the Korean culture.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, I was able to experience work culture for a little under a year. You know, I was an employee at a Korean company. And so I was introduced to Korean work culture and the hierarchy and the office place that I've always known about in my head, but to experience it is different.
So different.
Yeah. So navigating that is almost like a game. It's like a puzzle or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. How about this? This is a good one. You'll become, I'm kind of hopping around a little bit.
Yeah.
Just what stood out to me. When you go to Korea, you're going to become a celebrity. And I think this is more common now with the rise of influencers or mixed Koreans that you see often in Korean commercials. I am guilty of being one of those. Or appearing on TV shows, right? Being highlighted in documentaries or like shows like Your Neighbor
Tons
Charles.
Tons of documentaries on Happies.
Yeah, or that YouTube channel that I really detest where they're talking about like mixed homes. And, you know, it just gets more in the public eye. And you might think to yourself like, hey, I'm pretty good looking. And I'm also half Korean. And you know what? I sing and dance a little bit. I bet you I can make it there. Because the industry maybe feels more accessible than your home country. You might feel like, ah, I've got something special there. That's what people like. Because being mixed Korean is pretty trendy, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the entertainment world in Korea. So I think it's very easy to come to this conclusion. Like, you know what? I bet I could be a celebrity in Korea in some form or fashion. Because so many people have done it. Not to say it's impossible by any means. You could. But I don't think it's good to have that expectation.
Right. Or even that entitlement. Like a sense of entitlement.
Yeah. So, I mean, you wanted to be on TV when you went
to
Korea.
I did initially. Yeah, for different reasons. It wasn't like for my ego or anything like that. Of course, I would say that, right? But no, I mean, yeah. I mean, because I had certain goals and like, you know, I wanted to have a bigger platform. But once I sort of learned how things worked, and I quickly realized, you know what? I don't want to step into that.
Yeah.
And so I decided not to pursue that. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, yeah, because I've definitely read blogs or, you know, heard conversations and received messages like, I really want to be a K-pop idol in Korea. or I really want to get on TV in Korea and asking me, how can I do that? And I'm always, I come from the point of view of like, well, what makes you think you could? Like, and if it really starts with, well, because I'm mixed Korean, I love mixed Koreans, I think you're already coming from the wrong angle.
Yeah.
You know, just go to Korea and learn to be like the people first. And if you've got a special skill or talent and you want to show that to the world, that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go to Korea just to become a celebrity. And I think even if you did, you'll learn pretty quickly what right. the entertainment industry is like there.
Right. I mean, another expectation I think is you'll want to live in Korea forever. And I laugh because that was me.
Yeah.
And I think what changed for me was pandemic. And then also, I guess my career aspirations have sort of expanded, or my idea of what can be done career-wise.
Mm.
And I, you know, I guess I realized for me, maybe Korea wasn't going to be the best place, at least to live to accomplish that, at least for right now. Mm-hmm. It would be better to maybe reshift my focus. But that was, I would say, the secondary catalyst. The first primary catalyst was family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after pandemic hit, not being able to see family, things like that. Like, I think that was sort of the reason for us relocating. But you know, I thought I wanted to live in Korea forever, and that wasn't something that changed because, like, oh, I got you know, Korea's sucky place, or it's mm-hmm. not what I you know wanted it to be. I think I would have been happy overall, to stay there forever. And who's to say I won't go back, or mm-hmm. we won't go back,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think for some people, they do kind of discover it's not what it was cracked out to be, or it's not what they expected.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as easy, or maybe it's the acceptance issue. So mm-hmm. this kind of ties into everything that we mentioned before. Oh, I'm not, you know, a celebrity because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm ugly to them. So then, you know, not all half Koreans are like beautiful, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that is something that people realize. And I think that's okay. I mean, you're in a foreign country. It's a different place. And it's okay to realize, oh, maybe this isn't the place that, you know, I'm going to spend the rest of my life.
Totally. It's really like, it's up to you what you want out of your life and where you are at that moment. I know for myself, going to university in Korea was like the perfect thing at the perfect time. But I try to think of myself like, but what I want to have kids in Korea? And I have to think about that. Well, that's a different time of my life, and I would be in a different place with a different set of responsibilities. Would Korea be the right place for me to handle that? And honestly, I haven't come to a conclusion in terms of that one in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very natural that as you go through life, wherever you are, just your focuses change for the time being. Oh, I really want to focus on my career now. Okay, Korea is not offering me that. Let's go here to focus on my career. There's nothing wrong with that. But I do think you can get caught up with the excitement and thinking like, well, I'm starting my whole life over. And you are.
Yeah.
But life is long, you know, and you right. have a lot of different things that you can do. So I know for myself, like people used to ask me, oh, how long are you going to live in Korea? Like, Koreans would ask me, like, oh, mm-hmm. are you going to live here forever? And my response would always be, I have no plans to leave. At mm-hmm. the moment. That's how I would always say. I have no plans to leave at the moment. But then later on, turned out plans appeared. You know?
And sorry.
So we left Korea for the time being. So I just think it's really natural. Like if you hold on to things as in everything in life. Hold on to it, but hold on to it loose enough that you can let it go without, you know, the pain.
Yeah. And I would just say just like, yeah… just enjoy and be in the moment of that excitement of even if you want to live there forever, whether you do or not, just be excited about it. You know, don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like because you might end up doing that.
That's
true.
There
are many people who are staying there long term.
I mean, there are some people too, kind of along that vein, who end up staying in Korea forever because they have nothing else that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just eked out a living that's comfortable enough in Korea. And they've been there so long without any plan to leave or grow anything else. That they literally cannot go anywhere else without starting from the bottom. There are people who are like that because Korea can make a very convenient life at a lower level of…
cost of living.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. And so then you just end up… some people resent it. Like, oh, I'm stuck here because I got nothing else to do with my life. Right? And mm-hmm. That's a terrible way to be I don't know, be in Korea. And I don't like the idea of people staying there, quote unquote, feeling forced to stay there and resenting it.
Yeah.
I think if you have the choice to pursue what you want to, you should, whether that's in Korea or elsewhere. Okay. All right. The next thing. Ah, this one is, I guess, about family. I think you might have an expectation. Hey, if I move to Korea, I'm going to reconnect with my family. And it's going to be like we never were separated. And I'm going to learn everything. And they're going to tell me everything and answer all the questions that I've always had about myself and my parents and our life. You might have this expectation. It's a beautiful one. And I also think this can come from not just being mixed Korean. This can also come from Korean adoptees, right? Or Korean Americans who have lots of family left in Korea and they think, oh, I'm going to go back and reconnect. It's just the way family is and sometimes maybe the unspoken emotions that can appear from fractured relationships for one reason or another, whether it's, you know, from adoption or you've just been living away from Korean family for so long. It's really hard to overcome that in a short amount of time, you know? So you can invest a lot of time in building relationship with your Korean family and still never know who they are or even get into their life.
Sure.
And I think it's healthy to have that kind of expectation, honestly.
Right. You know, I think it, if I could comment on it, even though I don't have family in Korea, at least immediate family anymore, I think sometimes it's got to be like a mutual thing, right?
Yeah.
From what I've heard from, because we've done like a lot of interviews and we've heard these stories over and over, right? And sometimes it works out to where the family embraces like, say the foreign, you know, Korean or half Korean and just shows them around and they're just part of the family. Sometimes it's not as easy as that because it's like, oh, this is a new variable or element to our lives that maybe we feel like we just don't have space for. You know what I mean? We have our own lives and our own stresses and yeah, we'll be nice to you. We'll occasionally have dinner, but maybe it's just like too difficult to just like, you know, just welcome another family member in, you know? So it really depends on the situation as with everything. But just kind of feeling that out might help from my understanding, just like seeing, you know, where the family members are and just acting according to that.
Yeah. I think that's really wise. I mean, from my own personal experience, year after year after year, I would visit my Korean family for all the holidays. And that means, you know, I would take out my time and I would give money and gifts and all of these things and for years. And then when COVID hit and nobody was gathering together, it was almost like nobody missed me. It was so weird. I can't read what's inside their heads. I don't know. But it was kind of like, oh, was that for nothing? Like, did we not reconnect at all? And sometimes I still think about that. Like, did that even matter that, you know, I put all this time investment? And when I take a step back and have a more compassionate view, it's just like, I just don't think they have the space to deal with things, right? And me was just an extra thing that they just didn't have space to deal with at the time.
Right.
I'm sure they're thankful and I'm sure like we have many happy memories, but I don't know if you can just build relationships like that out of nowhere. You know, I just kind of like, here I am after so many years. Let's make it work, you know? And sometimes people just don't have the capacity for that. So as long as you have that expectation, it could go awesome. And you just have your new family or you rebuild right away. Or sometimes you might get hurt by it. And that's just the nature of family, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's another expectation. I mean, we can go on and on. But how about this one? Working in Korea will be easy and enjoyable.
I won't even…
this really deserves a whole separate episode. And we've done podcast episodes and we might have even done videos on this where we address it in some way. So we'll leave the juicy details out for now. But like I think working in Korea, like you just got to understand it's a different beast. It's a different world. It's a different system. And this is generally speaking, as compared to say America or even wherever else you're from, I guarantee you it's different from wherever you're from. Right. And that could be good or bad. I mean, there's a lot to be said about how hard Koreans work.
Yes.
You know, works really hard and can, you know, push themselves. I mean, Korea just got to a point where they had to outlaw or like limit the work week to, what was it, 52 hours, which has been changed.
Which now they took that back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but prior to that, it was just like, you know, 12-hour days are common, you know,
yeah.
and like five, maybe even 6 days a week, just depending. And so like, it's just a different beast. And so if you're expecting to go to Korea to work at like, say a company, like a, I won't name, well, this isn't radio, like a Samsung, just for example, right? Or any sort of company with the Korean culture, office culture, it's going to be very different, very big focus on hierarchy. In terms of it's very top down, you know, so the top person has the most power, like the CEO or the top manager, and it just trickles down from there. So you have to know your place. You have to play like office politics. You got to know what to say, when to say it. And you'll find that a lot of people, they're kind of like just going through the motions at work,
yeah.
doing what they got to do, but they might be a little frustrated. Definitely stressed.
Yeah, it's funny the way you're describing it. I bet you there are people who are like, yeah, it just sounds like office work culture here.
Right.
It's just different.
It is
when you actually are in it.
Yeah. So it's quite it's intense. I think that is the word I would describe it.
Mm.
Intense. Just generally speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there are, you know, I'm hearing about offices, including the one I worked at, was a little bit of a hybrid of kind of a Western style, but it was mostly still like Korean. But I think the younger folks are starting to create a little bit of a different office culture, right? To where you don't have to go to Hweshik, which is like a company dinner.
Worst.
That traditionally it's like you just have to go and you go with your bosses and you just drink. And it's sort of like a forced team activity.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a lot of times nobody wants to go to.
I read recently, I don't remember where I read it, but they were saying that like people who are like 35 and younger who are in the workforce, like a massive percentage of them are just like, we hate Hweshik.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you have to go after work. And a lot of times it's like, you know, it might be 7 or 8 and you have to wait for the boss to like be like, okay, let's go.
Yeah. Boss is like, hey guys, we're going to get off work early today. Yay. We're going to go to Hweshik. And it's like, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I guess a benefit is a lot of times it is paid for.
That's true. You get a free meal out of it.
Yeah.
And
so you
got to
drink, feed, you know, I guess feed your boss alcohol.
Yes.
You know, pour his drink or her drink.
Yeah.
And sometimes it might go to the next round, icha.
Mm-hmm. So and then you go to karaoke.
Yeah. So I don't know how. I think that is slowly starting to just…
Yeah, phasing out a little.
Yeah, phase out. But that is part of work culture and you're not getting paid for that.
Yeah. You know what? We should do an episode on work culture because there's just so much.
There really is.
And you experienced a type of work culture. I experienced a type of work culture. Speaking of that, I will be writing pretty extensively about it on the blog. I've been thinking about it a lot because it was such a horrible time of my life. So I think maybe writing it out will help purge those evil feelings that I have towards, you know, work culture in Korea. So if you're interested in that, you can keep an eye on the website. But I mean, really, there's a lot of things that can be said about living in Korea. And we, in this episode, it was more like tempering expectations that you might have going there. Now, it's very important to remember that people go to Korea for whole different reasons. No one's going to Korea all for the same exact reason. Some people it's for family. Some people it is for career. Some people it's to reconnect to roots. Some people it's like, you know what? I just want to attend a Korean university and learn the language. Like everyone's going to have a different reason for going to Korea. And I think the important thing is just to really believe in that reason.
True.
Decide, you know, what do I want from this? And try to pursue that to the best of your ability. It may or may not come to the fruition that you expect, but I can guarantee that if you have a genuine desire to live in Korea and to be part of the culture in the country, you're going to come away with a lot more than you went in intending to get.
100%.
Yes.
I would say like my 4 years there, though I experienced a little bit of, I don't want to say bad, but like things that maybe irked me or frustrated me overall, best time of my life, right? And I got so much out of it. And I wish my time was a little bit longer there. And again, who knows where what the future will hold. But like, I think it was such an enriching experience. And I think if you go into it with the mindset of having like the proper expectations and having a positive attitude, your experience will be good, because no place is perfect. And you could fall, prey to this sort of groupthink, not ideology, but just mindset of like a lot of foreigners coming to Korea, and they tend to start to complain. Not everyone, but they start to complain about things about Korea or Korean culture.
Yeah,
my biggest advice is try to stay away from that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those feelings are valid, right? But know that you are going to a foreign country or a different country, even though you are connected to it. And there's already a set culture and expectation and rules there. So you have to find your place and fit into that, knowing that they're not going to cater to you necessarily and what you're used to. So I think with that, you could, you will definitely have a much better experience.
True.
If you have those things in mind.
Yeah. If you're constantly struggling against the structure that already exists, in the end, you'll just bang yourself up. But if you jump into it and go along with what's happening, you're going to be able to experience and explore a whole lot more. So did that make sense? Or was that kind of a weird metaphor? I imagine it was like,
that was good.
Okay. Anyway, I'm not going to explain that. Okay. Well, I think that's what we'll wrap it up for this episode. And that being said, let's share some news. So if you guys follow us on the Instagram, which you can, it's on the Haffy Project, of course. We do share, you know, some clips from our YouTube videos. Or we share photos and the stories of you, our listener, if you write into us or you want to share through DM and, hey, this is a picture of my family and I just would love to share a little bit of the background. We love to share those things on the Instagram. And what's really cool is how it has grown beyond what we ever expected and caught some eyes that, you know, you just never thought that would ever happen. So it happened a couple weeks ago. It might be maybe almost months ago at this point, right? Maybe like a month or two by the time this episode comes out. But the American Library of Congress, they shared us on their official Instagram account.
Very cool.
It was really, really cool. And it was on the last day of May, which in the US, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this because it's fairly new to me.
Right.
The AAPI month.
Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Heritage Month, yeah. And so in celebration of that, the American Library of Congress was highlighting some Instagrams of people who were like archiving about people who fall under that category. And they reached out to us. And so you can check out the Library of Congress Instagram and you'll see our picture. Well, one photo that was shared with us by a guest from an interview. And it's just so cool to see that highlighted there. So we just wanted to share that. I guess it's a win of something cool that's happening at the Haffy Project. So thank you guys, of course, for always sharing your stories and experiences. And you can continue to do that by writing into us at thehaffyproject@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We are The Haffy Project.